دنیای ما، جامعه ما.
Our world, our community with Debbie Amini.
سلامی دوباره دارم خدمت شنوندگان عزیز. برای دوستانی که در این قسمت از برنامه به ما پیوستن توضیح میدم که این برنامه به مناسبت یادبود روز جهانی هولوکاست که همین فرداست تهیه شده و در این قسمت در خدمت میهمان عزیز دیگه هستیم که ایشون هم از سروایورهای مجارستان کشور هنگری هستند و توسط ارتش روسیه آزاد شدند. تامیس واینبرگر، Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
تامیس واینبرگر در سال 1939 یعنی همزمان با شروع جنگ جهانی دوم متولد شد. در سال 1943 دولت مجارستان یهودیان رو مجبور به پوشیدن ستاره زرد رنگی بر روی آستین‌ها و جلو و پشت لباس‌هاشون کرد. در این زمان بسیاری از شهروندان شروع به طعنه زدن کردند و اونها رو رادن جوز خطاب می‌کردند. در 1944 وقتی نیروهای ارتش آلمان مجارستان رو تحت سلطه خودشون درآوردن، به علت آشنایی پدر تامیس با افراد با نفوذ اونها به اردوگاه مرگ فرستاده نشدن. اما روزی مادرش به همراه صدها زن دیگر دستگیر شد و بریک فکتوری در بوداپست فرستاده شد. بریک فکتوری در واقع ایستگاه انتظاری بود برای انتقال زندانیان به اردوگاه مرگ آوشویتز. تامی، I'll let you take it from here. Tell us the rest of the story. What happened after your mom was arrested and taken to the brick factory?
When she arrived to the brick factory, she was there, I believe, no more than a day and a night. And then the Germans were retreating through Budapest. And actually, they came in to occupy and then they retreated. And at night, as the people were watching the huge German army going by, so they took away the attention from the future deportees to Auschwitz. And my mom, with a younger lady, escaped, climbing almost a 10 or 11 foot fence, where the spikes actually gone through one of her hands, and so she was injured, but she escaped, and she came back home. And of course, we knew that they're going to have a headcount there. And once she's not there, the Nazi authorities, the Hungarian Nazi authorities, are going to look for her. So that younger lady, she saved her life. My mom was, my whole family was invited to the house to hide there under the house. You could call it a wine cellar or just a cellar. Mm-hmm. And we were there quite a few weeks. Almost every day there was a little window, no, actually two windows in the cellar, looking towards the front of the house and towards the main gate. And almost every day the Hungarian Nazis knocked the door. And they asked the owner if any Jews are hiding there. Of course, they said no. By the way, the owner was, I don't know who, either husband or the wife was Jewish. The other one was Catholic, so it's a mixed marriage.
So that's why they were safe, because there was a Catholic
in
the house?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Otherwise, they would have been deported, because there are many Hungarian men who were Jewish married Christian woman, or Hungarian Jewish woman married Hungarian Christian man. So this way, at least for a while, they escaped deportation. Later, there was the end of the war. It didn't matter. If you were Jewish, doesn't matter who you married to, you go to Auschwitz or other concentration camps. So and then these guys, I saw their jack boots. You know, I remember myself since very, very young age. I have a tremendous memory. And so, you know, we were really exposed to the animosity of the Nazis, and which is worthwhile to mention that if they find out we were hiding there, they not only would have killed us, but they would have killed the owner of the house too.
So you were lucky they never found you, and you got to live there for how many weeks did you say?
I don't know how many weeks, but quite a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
And then they, I don't know how it's happened, the government established, rather I should say designated certain houses. They called it the Star House. So the Star House meant there were the Jewish insignia, the Star of David, which is a six-pointed star, mm-hmm. on the house. So we moved in there, and as we were going to get the tramway at that time, in our area, we were living in a suburbia of Budapest, there was no bus. The tramway, I run forward to the main street, and I said to my mom and dad, hurry up, the tramway is coming. And I never forget it. On the other side, there was a woman who said, you rotten Jews, you're trying to escape. I'm going to call the police. The tramway came, mm-hmm. and fortunately, we got onto it, and
okay.
nobody caught us. So we went on to the Star House. And
so Star House is what we call these days ghetto, or is
different? No. The ghetto comes later. No, the Star House was just designated for Jewish families to live there for a while.
And government designated that for them, right?
The government designated it, yes, 100%. So so what happened, and then one day my mom had to go downtown Budapest. I can't remember for what it was, food or some documents. I don't know
you
why.
You were very young then, yeah.
Yeah, and it was either November or December, and the Hungarian Nazis caught her again with a few hundred other Jewish women, and they took their clothes away completely naked in the snow and ice. They were walking them down to the Danube River,
mm-hmm.
because in those days the style was that many Jews never made it to Auschwitz, to the death camps. The Hungarians killed them on the spot.
Right.
So what did they do? They took the Jews, men or women, in this case they were all women, down to the Danube, and they shot them by the Danube. They fall into the water and let the river
take care of the body.
Yes.
Okay,
would you believe it? So, but in any case, and they were only God knows half a mile or so from the river when a Swedish gentleman from the Swedish embassy came by, and he had a mediocre rank, but he was a human being. His name was Raoul Wallenberg, who became very famous later on. And as a matter of fact, just to mention that during the Obama administration, the U.S. House gave Raoul Wallenberg's half-sister the Congressional Medal because Raoul Wallenberg saved, I don't know how many, but tens of thousands of Jews. So right. So he came by, he was driving by, and he immediately called out his car and said to the Hungarian Nazis that I claim these people under Swedish law to be Swedish citizens and Swedish protection. And the Nazis at that time, surprisingly, they were not 100% in control. They handed over all the ladies to Raoul Wallenberg,
mm-hmm.
and then he got lots of cars to take them into the Swedish embassy. They gave them shower, new clothes, because they were all naked, believe it or not.
In the Swedish embassy?
And yes, and a Swedish passport.
Wow.
So, and then what happened is, as soon as she had a Swedish passport for her and my father and I, she came home and everybody was kind of very happy and relaxed about it, and we had lots of good feelings. So what Raoul Wallenberg and the Swedish embassy did, because they were very human, they had some money, their own money, Swedish money, and the American, I don't know what they call joint or something at that time, mm-hmm. it's an American Jewish association,
yeah.
Sent the Swedes money to help the Jews. He bought up several blocks of apartment houses in Budapest,
okay.
With cash, and they made it, Raoul Wallenberg and his associates, which is the Swedish embassy, they made it, they call it under Swedish protection.
Uh-huh.
So then they let us move in there, And these apartment houses under Swedish protection, a few months later, became the Hungarian ghetto.
Okay.
So that's what happened. In the ghetto, the life was pretty tough. Most people were starving. Most apartment, I believe it was a 4 or 5 story building, an old building, about 4 or 5 feet thick walls. So it was built about 120 years before us. So what happened is every apartment they put in, we were living like herrings, 4 or 5, 6 families.
Okay.
In spite of that, there was only 2, maximum 3 bedrooms. Mm-hmm. Okay. And people died in starvation. Now, my mother was one of the best cooks, without prejudice, I'm saying that, in Hungary. She applied, because they asked Hungarian women to apply to cook for the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And she applied, and out of over 1,000 women, she was appointed to be the chief cook for the Nazis. So that means that not every day, but at least 3 or 4 times a week, sometimes 5, she smuggled food for my father and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't eat it in front of the others because they would have killed us.
Okay.
And so what we had to do is go into the restroom, and that's where we ate, and ate quick, and we came out.
Mm-hmm.
So and that was a lifesaver because almost every morning I vividly remember they were carrying out men, women, children who died in hunger.
Okay.
So, of course, that was a terrible thing. But, you know, this is what you call survival. Okay.
Right.
This was, that's it. So what happened? You didn't know, not from day by day, but you didn't know from hour to hour if you're going to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and we all actually, we were told not to look at into the eyes of the Hungarian Nazis because that could provoke them to do something.
Okay.
And quite often, for absolutely no reason at all, they put people against the wall and shoot them. Okay. That's it.
Okay. They just wanted to come and kill somebody.
Yeah. No, they just hated the Jews. In fact, I have to insert this before I go further with this, that when Adolf Eichmann, the German kingpin for deportation, he was in charge of deportation around the Europe of the Jews.
Uh-huh.
When Adolf Eichmann arrived to Budapest, that's right, he said in his trial, I think his trial was in Jerusalem or somewhere in Israel, and he said, when I got to Hungary, he said, I had the easiest time. He said, I told the Hungarians, because that was towards the end of the war, late 44, very early 45, I told the Hungarians that, you know, we are fighting the Russians and that's our most important thing. And I have no trains and I have no soldiers to take the Jews to Auschwitz. And the Hungarians said, oh, don't worry about that. We give you the trains and we give you Hungarian soldiers. Just take them all.
Oh, God.
Okay. And that's a fact, by the way. And this was in his trial. I mean, this is recorded. Anybody can check it out.
Because so, now the war just knows the German forces and Nazis to be to be involved in Holocaust. But now I'm learning that it wasn't just Germans. It was Hungarian forces as well who were with them. They agreed with their...
Right, Debbie. The only thing what I like to point out too, it wasn't just a Hungarian. I'm talking about Hungarians because I was born in Hungary.
I know.
But the same thing happened in Yugoslavia, in Romania, Czechoslovakia. Okay, you see, because basically what is anti-Semitism? Anti-Semitism is nothing more or less but envy and jealousy,
right. Okay?
Because the Jews are, generally speaking, very hardworking people. I disagree with their politics often, but they're very hardworking people, very successful. And
they created envy and jealousy all over.
That's right. That's as always has been. And for example, in Yugoslavia, the first thing they did when they deported all the Jews, the Yugoslav Croatians and others, they took over the Jewish hotels, the Jewish houses, the Jewish yachts. You know, that was... That's it.
Tommy, tell me about the time that you were, the time that you liberated.
Yeah.
Start from the beginning, what happened.
Right. So what happened, there were several blocks of apartment houses, which was the ghetto. So we were on one end, in the last apartment house of a big block where there were five, six, seven apartment houses. Mm-hmm. And the Germans already pulled out, but the Hungarian Nazis stayed behind. They said, we're not going to pull out until we kill every Jew. Okay? So one morning, about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, early morning, they lined us up. Everybody was called out for a roll call, and they lined us up against the wall of the inner court of the apartment house. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, we call you, we're going to kill you bastards. Now you're going to die. That's what they told us. So what happened, my mom and dad gave, I was about just between 5.5 to 6 years old. So my mom and dad gave me a piece of paper with a name and address on it. Of course, at that age, I couldn't read or write. Mm-hmm. But they said, what we want you to do, that when they start shooting, immediately for on the floor.
Okay.
And we're going to fall on you. And then when the darkness comes, crawl out. Mm-hmm. And go as far as you can. And then ask people for this address. And if you arrive to this address, these people was one of their good friends, they're going to take care of you for the rest of your life.
So you were all expecting, actually the parents were expecting to die and hoping that you will survive.
Yes,
and
absolutely. Absolutely.
Going to
absolutely.
The address that you were giving.
Okay. 100%. So what happened, the shooting came closer and closer and closer because they went apartment house by apartment house. And the next door apartment house, they remember screaming, shouting, crying, and then quiet. So they killed everybody. So then the Hungarian Nazis, I don't remember how many were, there must have been 7, 8 of them. Mm-hmm. They brought over it was a heavy machine gun, so they brought over the legs of the machine gun, which was a tripod, like mm-hmm. Three legs, okay? And then they went back next door to bring the machine gun and the rounds, the mm-hmm. bullets, okay? And while they went back, in that 2 to 3 minutes, the Russians came in.
Oh, my God, right okay? in time.
Yes, right in time. I mean, you know, so I do believe in God, okay? When the Russians came in, not many, but 3 or 4 or maybe 5 Hungarians, they spoke Russian. And mm-hmm. they told the Russians what's happening. So the Russians were hiding in the dark recesses of the apartment house because, you know, old apartment houses were built not like light and big. You know, there are very little corridor here, corridor there, leads to apartment. Mm-hmm. So they were hiding there. And when the Hungarian Nazis brought in the machine gun, then... and they started feeding the bullets in it, then the Russians jumped out and they killed them all.
Okay, and that's why you survived.
Yeah. So, but what happened, which kind of interesting, Debbie, is this. After that, on the back of the Russians' back, they were carrying sacks, not like the British or the Americans, leather sacks carrying things. But they were carrying, like, over here, you carry the potato. And you know mm-hmm. those potatoes, knitted sacks,
right.
which is cheap,
yeah.
cheap. But mm-hmm. the Russians were poor people, so, you know, that's all they had. So they took the sacks off the back, mm-hmm. and they opened it up. And it was the first time in my life I saw chocolate. I heard of chocolate. I never seen chocolate, mm-hmm. because during the war, that was nothing. People were
of
glad if
dude.
They could eat something,
right.
okay? And so they gave us salamis and bacon, and you could name anything you could think of, they gave us. And then they brought in, they had a portable kitchen with the troops carrying with them, mm-hmm. and they brought it in and they served hot food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but so actually after the hot food, they gave us the chocolate and everything. And as a kid, I, through the interpreter, I asked them to, if I could hold a submachine gun in my hand, you know, as a little boy, mm-hmm. that was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they let me, and I felt on cloud nine.
Wow. Did they give you any money?
So no, they didn't. So what happened after they fed us, every Russian soldier rolled up their sleeves.
Uh-huh.
And you wonder what happened. So as they rolled up their sleeves, on each of their arms, they had 7, 8, 9, or 10 watches.
Wow.
So what they took away from dead Germans,
uh-huh.
who they killed. And in those days, currency was nothing. They were sweeping with brooms the currency in the street. You couldn't buy nothing for it because it had no value.
Uh-huh.
So what happened is they asked us who wants which watch.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very nice of them because for them, that was money. That was currency. With that, they bought things in the black market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I would say basically that's it. And these people, they were all coming from, the interpreters find out, not from the cities, the Russian soldiers, these coming from the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
And but they were good people.
Yes, okay. Of course.
Very good, very good hearted. They didn't know what to do. They literally took the shirt off their back to help us. Okay, so
that's
nice. My brief story here.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Again, I'm going to encourage people to visit www.aboutholocaust.org and learn more about this memory that needs to be alive. Learn from it, learn from history, and never ever let it happen again. Thank you.